I just had a thought.
There's a first.
Nah, think about it for a minute. Santa's hotline, the way the office is decorated. You think this could be the Christmas episode?
You know, it just might be.
Nah, couldn't be the Christmas episode. There's no snow.
Hey Kids Comics!
And here are your hosts, Michael and Andrew Leyland.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful. Was that a good start? Did you like that?
I mean, there's only one thing frightful here, and it's not the weather.
Happy Christmas! Oh, it's Christmas! As Noddy Holder would have it. Yeah. If you listen carefully, you can hear the snow.
That's, yeah.
You can hear that.
It's the sound of all the little elves.
This is the level that we go to.
Professionalism.
For not just professionalism, but providing an ambiance.
I was up at 3 o'clock doing my little rain dance to the gods.
To make it snow.
Yeah.
Then we got the fire. Yeah. We're roasting our chestnuts on it. We're celebrating festive humbuggery.
Yeah.
In quality wear. Just being all around scumbags and maggots.
Yes.
Basically. It's time to turn our sherry-fueled minds to fun of a festive kind. Do you like that? There was loads of alliteration there.
I appreciated it. I'm worthy of Stan the Man himself.
I thought so. I'm probably got somebody else to write it and then just wrote my name on it.
Yeah, yeah. All the ghost writers you've got.
AI did that.
Yeah.
AI did not do that. I did that. A typical UK Christmas isn't so much a time for festive cheer as a time for festive beer. Less saccharine sentimentality, more Victorian-era miserabilism. Not for us, the cloying sentimentality of Christmas rom-coms. Much as they may try to bully their way in, thanks Richard Curtis. Rather, Christmas is a time of despair. With the deep depression of EastEnders and the bleak vision put forth by Scrooge and Tiny Tim, Christmas was as much a time for reflection and the plights of others as it was a time for cheer. It was a time for ghost stories and eerie goings-on, reflected in the ghost stories of M.R. James, a regular staple of the BBC schedules from 1971 to 1978, with reruns throughout the 80s, and it was revived in 2005 and is still running today. There's a new one tonight.
Tonight.
Christmas Eve, tonight.
Yes.
December 24th, tonight. Yeah. There's a brand new one.
I'm forgetting that we're doing a hoot nanny here.
Yes. We are recording a Christmas Eve episode, but it's not live.
Still,
I don't know how to tell people.
It's still relatively festive.
And it's still Christmas.
We are in the Christmas season. Tis the season.
Yeah, we're not recording this in June.
The Lord of the Rings rewatch has begun.
Yeah. I've not watched any of mine yet.
Really?
No, I've not watched Die Hard. Okay. I've not watched Twas the Episode Before Christmas.
Okay.
I've not watched Superman. None of my Christmas favourites.
See, I start, and I've had time to forcibly not being able to do anything.
Yeah, because you've been ill.
Yeah. So I started Lord of the Rings, as is tradition, one disc of the extended trilogy a night.
Do you still? Because your mum, right? Your mum's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I don't appreciate it. She watches it.
Is it only
summer,
one day?
But she'll watch it like 2-3 times a year as well.
And But the Christmas rewatch,
right?
She will set aside like a Sunday and go, "Today we're rewatching Lord of the Rings."
No, that's bastardised. I stick to the original tradition.
Oh well, when she's really being a purist, she'll do The Hobbit as well.
That we're pushing the boat. We've lost our sense. This level of modernity.
Not only one day
is not. I don't appreciate this.
She'll do The Hobbit one weekend.
No, we've lost our way there. It's one disc a night, and we don't bother with The Hobbit.
I prefer it that way, because it's just like easy, digestible 90-minute chunks, really.
And to this day, before I bought an actual physical copy, and I had to go to my pirate friends down at the bay, and it was one file. But because I'd seen it that many times, I could tell you when the disc finished, so I knew when to stop the film
to stop
myself.
The movie. So, is this like I Know Where All the Advert Breaks Are in Star Wars?
Yeah.
Because that's the one I had on VHS.
Yes. And then my other one is the Greta Gerwig Little Women, which is a relatively modern contender. It's only a few years old.
Is that a Christmas film?
Well, they celebrate two Christmases in it, so I think so.
Having it. If people are now claiming Batman Returns is a Christmas film,
yeah,
you can have Little Women.
It works.
Yeah. Superman's not a Christmas film.
There we go.
I just watch it at Christmas.
And occasionally I'll watch Black Christmas, the original.
I was just going to say.
I don't deal with any fakers.
You're not talking about the two naff remakes.
No.
The original Margot Kidder.
Yeah.
The original's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a nice little grimy.
Strangely modern and progressive for its era.
For 1974 was Black Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's because one of Margot Kidder's best movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a shallow bank. I love Margot Kidder, don't get me wrong, but, you know, There's that, Amityville and Superman.
Yeah.
That's pretty much
that's,
it.
That's, yeah.
Well, you know. Anyway, it is a short step from ghosts to hobbits to horror. Would there be some cracking modern Christmas horror movies like Black Christmas's remix?
Yeah.
or Gremlins. Gremlins is a Christmas film.
Yeah.
Musical comedy Anna and the Apocalypse.
Okay.
I love that. You ever seen it?
I've not.
It was on Film 4 last week.
Right.
So it will be on Film 4's Foreplay.
Okay.
Which is not the name of it.
Not the name.
But should be.
It's.
It should totally be Foreplay.
Yeah,
they missed a trick there.
That's.
You know, it's just called Four online, isn't it?
No, it's all Four, Channel Four.
Something
is it
like
just
that. Whatever. Yeah. It's not Foreplay.
It's one of the Fours.
Which
but it should be.
Which is right there.
There's 100 mums out there just begging for it to be that. So they can complain about something.
Yeah, but then we would just go around and but it's Four, as in the number Four.
Oh, yeah.
Play.
We would,
don't mean anything else.
We would coyly go that and then wink to the camera.
Yeah. We'd look directly into camera as we did that.
Austin Powers mode activate.
Anna and the Apocalypse, well worth watching.
Okay.
Genuinely a surprising Christmas movie. We've already mentioned old school slasher Black Christmas, which is a classic. A mere hop, skip and a jump, though, to action-based Christmas. But you see what I'm doing here?
It's a segue after segue.
Quality.
This is, you were giggling while you were writing this, weren't you?
I was laughing like a loon. This intro, behind the curtain of writing a show, this intro literally starts with, how can I shoehorn in what I want to talk about into Christmas? How do I do that?
You just worked backwards from
there. I did, yeah. I worked backwards from there. So, Christmas-based action movies, Violent Night.
Okay.
That's not bad. Tim Harbour.
Right.
Better known as ex-Mrs. Lily Allen. Ex-Mr. Whatever. He's Lily Allen's ex.
Yeah.
I know
who you meant. I was just trying to get through the word vomit.
Surprisingly, we're not drunk. Tim Burton's full-on Batman Returns, which I just mentioned, Christmas movie.
Didn't you just say that it wasn't?
It isn't.
Okay.
But it is.
Right.
If you want it to be,
okay,
it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, sure.
You know, Shane Black's neo-noir Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Good
classic.
Feel. Solid, yeah.
Is there a Shane Black movie that isn't Christmas? Because Lethal
Weapon
is Christmas.
The Nice Guys is set at Christmas.
The Nice Guys is at Christmas.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
Starts at Christmas.
Right.
We're not encouraging Mel Gibson watching here, but Lethal Weapon.
We are encouraging Nice Guys watching.
We are encouraging
I
Nice
that
Guys.
Day.
It's great.
Solid film.
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Okay.
Christmas movie.
Right.
Is The Predators.
I've never seen it, so I can't say.
It is easily the worst Predator movie.
Yeah, I've heard it's a misfire.
Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah.
Until halfway through, a new CG Predator shows up.
Okay.
Spoilers. Kills costume man Predator. And from that point on, you're like you've lost me now.
Okay.
Because right. I know that's CG now.
Right.
Whereas a guy in a costume is you're fighting somebody.
Okay.
And I'm sure there were CG enhancements.
Is that the one where it turns out that there is an untapped superpower in a certain type of person?
I think so.
Is that the, yeah.
Yeah. It spends the last 10 minutes setting up the sequels that will never happen.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, because
so
it was the first of a trilogy.
That never happened.
No. And every time a movie set out to do the first of a trilogy, Superman Returns, Man of Steel, The Predator, one of the Terminator, three of the Terminator movies.
Yeah.
It never happens. And it's, I don't know who needs telling, knock that off. Just make a film, and if it's good,
there's your sequel.
You will get a sequel. And if it's not good, you made a film.
Yeah.
Instead of a bunch of films that now don't mean anything because they don't lead anywhere because you wanted them to lead somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the king of it is Terminator, isn't it? Which had three movies in a row that were the starts of new trilogies that never happened.
I suppose like the most kind of egregious of that is the Dark Universe that Universal tried to do with
Tom
Cruise the Mummy reboot.
Yeah, Russell Crowe.
Because they made such a big deal out of the franchise that it was going to be. Not sequels or anything, but the franchise. And there was one film that just kind of fizzled out.
And then they did a cheap version of The Invisible Man for Blumhouse. It was great.
Yeah.
So there you go. Make a film for $10 million.
Just
see how it goes. But of course, if we're talking action movies and Christmas, the granddaddy of them all is Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
Right.
It's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
It is totally a Christmas movie.
Okay.
But I'm kidding, it's Die Hard. And I'm sorry.
I'm going to go for Die Hard 2.
Are you going to go for Die Hard 2? Just to be snowing it.
Just to be more kind of obnoxious.
Because it's actually snowing.
I've got no skin in the game here, but you know, if I can be contrarian, then I will be.
It's Die Hard, and the answer to the question is Die Hard a Christmas movie is yes, and so is Die Hard 2. And it's boring at this point because it's a Christmas movie. If you want it to be a Christmas, it's shown every Christmas now.
Okay.
Die Hard is now shown at Christmas.
The thing that's really boring, though,
yeah,
is we went through this period of time where you've got so many, the world's most annoying people in the world.
I was just going to go down the same path.
Decided that they were going to unionize and would just be like, did you know Die Hard's a Christmas movie? It's my favorite. It's a Christmas. Just because it's an action film, but it's, and we just universally said, shut up.
Yeah.
And thankfully for us, those people turned into Grinch loving people because that's the thing at the moment. Now, thankfully, the die-harders, they went back to the hole. They crawled back under the hole, but some of them still exist. And when you started to sound like one the other day, I had to slap you down. Well, no, we're not doing that.
This is the point that I'm making. It is the worst people in the world who will have that argument with you.
Yeah.
Because they are so smug about it.
Yes, yeah.
It's like they've picked this completely off the wall, out of the box choice for favourite Christmas movie. Then they sit there smugly with their arms folded. And you're like, but it is a Christmas movie. What's the point?
Yeah.
It's a Christmas movie. You can watch wherever you want.
Yeah.
But it's a Christmas movie if you want it to be a Christmas movie. End.
Yeah.
And it's and there's other things like that. It's people who say the Beatles are overrated.
But they are.
That kind of smug, arrogant, irritated. We know the kind of people.
Yeah. I mean,
Beatles are not overrated. I'm sorry, but they're not.
They're not the Monkees, though.
That is true. They're not the Monkees. And in a fight to the death between Peter, Mickey, Davey, and the other one.
Yeah.
And Ringo, George, Paul, John, and the other one.
Yeah.
And there was only four, weren't there?
Yeah.
I'm on the Monkees' side.
Ringo would give it a good go. He'd be the last one left.
You think? Because he's just solid. He's in love. He's in love.
No, I think there's like some hidden strength in that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I honestly, I'm on the Monkees' side because I looked this up.
Right.
On Geno.
Because who would win in a fight?
No. The reason that I love the Monkees to this almost irrational level of liking them more than the Beatles.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I know they're not as good as the Beatles. I know that.
Yeah.
But the BBC started a rerun of the Monkees in 1982.
Right.
Okay. Right. And they ran it until 1988.
Mm-hmm.
The show itself only ran for 2 years.
I was thinking...
The show itself ran from 66 to 68.
Right.
And they ran it everywhere. Okay. It was on afternoon kids TV. Mm-hmm. It was on Saturday afternoons. It was on Sunday mornings on BBC Two.
Right.
It was shown as part of Going Live. They showed it wherever they had 25 minutes that they could conceivably slot in an episode of the Monkees.
Right.
So that was me from, what, 10 to 16?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that's just...
Yeah.
Filtered into, what's his name? To the point where I know obscure Monkees songs.
Monkees by Osmosis.
Yeah, because it was just there. Yeah. Like, the one I really love? This just doesn't seem to be my day. Not in anybody's top list of top 10 Monkees songs.
Okay.
And they did do a Christmas episode, the Monkees.
Right.
So okay. there's your tenuous link.
We get really good at this.
Yeah. And it's got a lovely song at the end of it called Rio You. Right. It was only recently just released because Mickey DeLenz is going on tour again, isn't he?
Is it?
Because he's the last surviving monkey.
Oh, what's he need to pay off?
he did a cover of R.E.M. songs.
Okay.
Do you remember? No. Mickey DeLenz sings R.E.M. He did R.E.M. songs. And he did a couple of things.
Is that the new in vogue thing, covering R.E.M. songs?
Yeah, it must be.
Okay.
It's because they've gone away and never come back.
So there is an R.E.M.
And they released a Christmas single every Christmas. You see how I keep trying to shoehorn this in. But, after Die Hard, what of the Die Hard sequel? Because, right, here's my theory. You know my theory, right?
Okay. I know many of them.
Okay. Any series of movies that becomes a franchise is, one, stone cold, five star, locked in, classic, and then a bunch of sequels. Of varying quality to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very rarely is the sequel better than the original. Now, I know what you're thinking, and you're right. Andrew, you're thinking, Empire Strikes Back, not better than Star Wars. I'll tell you why. Glad you asked. It doesn't stand on its own.
Yeah.
So it cannot, by definition, be a better film than Star Wars. Okay. It's a bridging movie.
Excellent point. Well put.
Godfather 2, likewise, does not stand on its own.
Also, Godfather 3 is the best one.
We're just full of controversial opinions today, aren't we? Die Hard 2 is a better Christmas movie than Die Hard. Godfather, do you prefer Godfather 3 in its new edit?
I've still not seen the new edit.
Right.
Okay. And I think, little explanation.
Yeah.
Watching it, only, I think it was a COVID watch. And obviously, the Godfather has such a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one that I actively enjoyed more as a film because it felt less bloated and very serious and in love with itself was the third one.
So you're like with Peter Griffin. Right. It insists on C.S. Lewis.
But it's also Pacino's Pacino at that point.
Not by the third one. By the third one.
Pacino was... He started to enjoy acting more.
Right.
Whereas in the first two, he's quiet. He's taken it too seriously.
And he doesn't look like Robert De Niro either.
No.
He's not become De Niro at that point, has he?
Yeah.
I liked him all when I watched
The Godfather films, okay, maybe they were made too early. Maybe they were just too ahead of the time.
Very possibly. But they were entertaining enough. So, okay, what's left then? Aliens. I will give you Aliens.
Alien has the biggest hit or miss ratio than any other franchise.
Yes. But also, Aliens stands on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
You do not have to have seen Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And I advise you to not watch anything else after the Aliens.
Yeah.
Just stick with Aliens. And it was, so Aliens is legitimately the only film series
mm-hmm.
that actually challenges me on that viewpoint.
Well, so interestingly...
Because they are both five-star movies.
Interestingly as well, Prometheus and Romulus
yeah.
also hold
Covenant.
On their... Covenant, that's the one. Also hold up on their own.
Yes. Two because they sequels. Shouldn't be linked to Alien. They are much better science fiction movies
also,
if they don't link to Alien.
Romulus
Covenant.
Covenant is a sequel to Prometheus that still holds up on its own.
Yes. And we're never going to get the third one. Because
yes,
people
true.
Were, these aren't Alien movies. No, they shouldn't have been Alien movies. They should have just been sci-fi movies.
But the second one that they actively tried to make an Alien film
yeah.
is lesser because
is
of it.
Is lesser because of it. Exactly right.
And, Romulus, the one that I do want to keep
Covenant.
Saying Romulus. No. The other one, the other sequel, the other Alien film, the newest one.
Oh.
That is Romulus.
Yes.
Yeah. Garbage. Terrible
yes.
movie.
Absolutely awful.
The worst.
Yeah.
It's really good for the first hour
yeah.
until it wants to become the greatest hits of Alien.
It's awful.
It's awful.
And so many people, no, it's really good. It's a great scene. No,
for the first hour, yeah.
It's shit.
Yeah. It's dreadful.
And it lost me completely at Get Away From Her, You Bitch.
As if Aliens exists within the context
yeah.
of its own universe.
Because when he said Get Away From Her, I was on board.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally looked at your mum and said, he better not say You Bitch. Because he pauses
yeah.
for the audience to go, I know what he's doing here. And I went, don't do
and
the
thing.
And
then he looks directly
at
into
the camera,
camera
and goes, You Bitch. And I went, off.
Yeah.
Fan wankery at its highest. There is no way you'd know that that was said.
No.
There is no way it means anything in the context of that movie.
No.
It is the purely, for the audience to go, ah-ha!
Yeah. Yeah.
Wank. Of the highest order.
We're not even talking about the CGI AI zombie actor in there either. That's...
God, just dreadful.
A terrible film.
On all score. The TV show.
I see, I've heard that's good until it stops being good.
Yes,
not,
it's exactly the same
I've
as
not
Romulus.
Been brave enough to watch it.
It's good until it stops being good. The problem I have with the Alien franchise,
mm-hmm.
every single one of them is about the same thing. Corporations are bad, okay?
Whereas, interestingly, all the Predator films are about the exact same thing, but Predator's been scoring recently, doing the exact same thing.
The Predator movies are in the upper echelons of locked in cold stone
yeah.
cold five-star first classic movie
yeah.
and sequels of varying degrees. Every single Predator movie, except The Predators,
mm-hmm.
is better than it has any right to be.
Exactly. Yeah.
Predator 2...
Great film.
Is great.
Great
yeah.
film.
Genuinely, genuinely surprising how good that movie... I watched it once when it came out of the cinema.
Okay.
Dismissed it out of hand. When we got Disney Plus, Mum bought me Disney Plus for my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I rewatched all the Predator movies.
Right.
Because they're there now.
Yeah.
I watched Predator 2, genuinely impressed.
The only one not on it is the Adrian Brody one, isn't it? I think we had to, when we were
is
watching
it?
Through them, I think that's
the only
one.
Because I'm sure
on
that's
there.
On there now.
Oh, it might be.
Because that's Predators.
No, that's is that not The Predator?
No, The Predator is...
Because there's multiple of them,
Shane
of course.
Shane Black's
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Isn't it? What was
yes.
wrong with just calling it Predator 3?
Oh.
But Predator 2, much better than it has any right to be.
Yes, it does.
The Adrian Brody one,
was
surprisingly
fine.
Good.
Yeah.
I honestly, genuinely, again, I was surprised by that one.
It felt very 2006-y.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Good, not shit. We're not talking Alien Resurrection here.
No, that's, yeah.
Anyway, there's none of them are as bad as the worst Alien movies.
No.
None of them.
No.
The Predator, even The Predator, which I think is the Shane Black one,
yeah,
that's good for its first half an hour or so.
Okay,
yeah. And then it falls off a cliff. And then the new animated one is
Hunter of Hunters.
Yeah, that's really good.
And then you got Prey.
Prey is really good. And then I've not seen the new film.
No.
Because I didn't get to the cinema to see it.
No, I've not seen it.
But Predator has like this quite high benchmark for its sequels.
Yeah.
But still adheres to the first film is a locked in stone cold 5-star classic.
Fast and the Furious. I rewatched that first film again.
I don't rate them at all.
5-star classic, the rest of it. Well, the thing with that, though, is it's interesting because it completely changes what it is as a franchise.
It's about family.
It's about... It was a Point Break remake.
Yes, it was a Point Break remake.
And it was at its best when it was about fast cars go broom on the street.
Yes, it was great.
Now we're jumping cars out of space.
And it's 3 hours long.
And
And it's an ego trip for Vin Diesel. And I can't be bothered enough.
But that first one, locked in Stone Cold Classic.
Okay, well that fits the template.
Yeah.
Even Star Wars, which is a controversial opinion.
Right.
Locked in, Stone Cold, 5-star classic first movie.
Yeah.
Sequels of varying degrees of quality.
Varying degrees.
Yeah. So, you know, all of them fit my template, which leads me to...
Excellent tangent. Like, that was...
Die Hard. Die Hard is set at Christmas.
Yeah.
It's a Christmas movie. The aforementioned Die Hard 2, Die Hard, a dumb title aside, is much better than it has any right to be.
See, I've never seen anything post 3.
You're not missing much.
I didn't think
so. So Die Hard with a Vengeance is the best sequel.
Okay.
That's the third one.
Right.
That's actually really entertaining, largely because of Sam Jackson.
It's my favourite of the three. It's the one I go to rewatch more.
And Bruce looks like he's having fun.
Yeah.
Even though he's got a ridiculous herpes. Yeah. They should have just let him be bald earlier.
Okay.
Because he's actually got the herpes. It's only down the middle of his head.
Right,
so he's grown his hair at the sides.
Yeah.
And then they've just put a herpes down the middle. And it's ginger.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't match his hair. Bruce should have put his foot down earlier and said, just let me be fucking bald. Which he did in the sequels.
Let David Addison die.
Yeah, let David Addison go. Let me... screw this herpes dribble. Let me just shave my head.
Yeah.
He should have just done that straight away. Live Free or Die Hard.
Not what it's called.
It is not called that in this country.
Okay, right.
In this country, it was Die Hard 4.0. I think you will agree, is a worse title.
It's so much worse.
Yes.
That implies a 4.1 and onwards.
So you're sorry that you criticised Live Free or Die Hard.
I do. I want the Live Free back.
Yeah. Live Free or Die Hard, as it was called, a desperate attempt to be modern, is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
Okay.
But the fifth one, A Good Day to Die Hard.
That's fine, I guess.
It's risible.
Right.
The fifth one's just not very good at all. Michael Scott, you ever watch The Office?
The American Office? Yes.
Michael Scott said, you know what? Here's the thing about Die Hard 4. Die Hard 1, John McClane's just this normal guy, you know? He's just this normal New York City cop, gets his feet cut, gets beat up, but he's just an everyday guy. In Die Hard 4, he's jumping a motorcycle into a helicopter in the air, you know? He's invincible. It's sort of lost what Die Hard was. He's not the Terminator.
I never thought that I would live to see the day that we use an office quiz as an argument, but sure.
But he's not wrong. He legitimately isn't wrong.
Yeah.
And the things that we like about John McClane, that he's just a schlub.
Is that he complains about crawling through air vents and putting his feet on glass.
Always partial to Roy Rogers myself. So when he's, what's his name, when he's jumping airplanes through helicopters and...
When it becomes an action film rather than your little action comedy film.
Yeah, it's just not, it's not great. But,
and
we say all that over 25 minutes to say this, there is a sixth Die Hard. It is called A Million Ways to Die Hard. Now, I know what you're thinking, and you're right. But Andrew and Michael, you're thinking, there's no such film. And you'd be right, lovely listener. There is no such film. But there's a clue in the title. We're not a film podcast.
I feel like we should be. We're having fun here. We should do a one-off movie podcast.
I thought about that. I thought we should do stuff like that. Just like a kid's special.
Yeah.
But it's movies and comic and TV and shit.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But anyway, I have in my hands here A Million Ways to Die Hard, a one-off graphic novel written by Frank Tieri with art by Mark Texiera, who I've met.
Okay.
Lovely man.
Right.
Met him at one of the London comic conventions. Okay. He signed a Spider-Man comic for me.
Right.
Absolutely top bloke. Loved him. I'd never even heard of this, published by Insight Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of it. I found it at Tragore Mills in Cornwall for the grand price of £3.99. I think the sticker's still on it.
Right, okay.
And given that this was a graphic novel that should have cost 20 of your Earth dollars,
mm-hmm.
so that would have been, what, £17.99 over here for this?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have paid £17.99 for it.
Right.
But £3.99, bargain.
It's the equivalent, isn't it, of like those movie bins where you just find a bunch of DVDs for a squid.
Yeah. And it is, for all intents and purposes, Die Hard 6. Is it not?
I mean, it's Die Hard. It's, I guess, it's got the characters in it doing the things.
We've got two of them.
Yeah.
And a couple of vaguely linked.
On paper, yeah, it's Die Hard.
I'm glad you agree with me 100%. All right, vague plot. 30 years after the taking of Nakatomi Plaza, a retired John McClane has been pulled back into the game by a dangerous foe he never thought he'd face again. A psychotic serial killer with a theatrical taste for casting his victims in reproductions of Hollywood's greatest and deadliest films. Just when he thought he was out,
they pulled him back in.
Godfather. Do you see how we link all this together? It's like when a maestro composes a symphony.
Fuck off.
That's what we do in podcast form. I'm sorry, even I could give a straight face. That was so pretentious.
With a little more conviction, you might have had me in it.
Oh God,
we are maestros. You're right.
Oh, I love Christmas episodes. Everything's just off the wall.
And we're not even drinking.
We're not even drinking. This is very true. This is our Christmas pick for this year. It is set at Christmas. It is on the eve of Nakatomi Plaza's 30th anniversary, which means it's Christmas Eve.
It's the single only mention of Christmas. It is Christmas through implication.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Oh, 100%. The cover is a pastiche homage to the original movie poster.
Yes.
And it bears a vague resemblance to Bruce Willis.
I think that's a general comment on the art in and of itself, though. It's very vague resemblance.
As if
no one really gave permission for this to happen.
I think this is the thing we need to get out of the way, straight out the front door, is that none of the characters look like the actors. And whether it was, like you say, a rights issue or whatever, I don't know. But we're not going to complain about that through the whole thing.
No.
That's true. They do not look like the actors.
It looks just enough like the late movies McClane for you to think that's McClane rather than it looking like Bruce Willis.
Yeah, it's like the Carman Infantino Star Wars comics.
Which is more complimentary compared to modern adaptations, let's say the Marvel Star Wars comics, where everyone looks like the actors rather than the characters.
Because it's photoshopped within an inch of its life. Yeah. I would rather this approach, where Mark Texier is clearly drawing and not just using Photoshop.
Yeah.
I would rather that, because at no point when reading this do you think that's not John McClane.
No.
You know it's John McClane. He doesn't look a lot like Bruce Willis, but he looks like John McClane.
Yeah.
So we're fine with that. So the story starts, John is not at the celebration for Nakatomi Plaza because he doesn't want to be there,
because
what's he got to celebrate? He's in the bar, stuff happens, he flashes his badge, but he's retired.
Yeah, and...
Are you allowed to carry that when you retire?
I don't think you are, but I've seen way too many action films where they hand in their badge and their gun before they go rogue, so that's my only real knowledge.
And I've seen Dirty Harry where he throws it in the sea and stuff like that.
So I was
if there are any American cops listening to this show, if you can confirm that what John McClane's doing here is illegal...
I mean, it's definitely got to be illegal, because you can't dress up as a police officer. That's a crime.
That's true. So he's still walking around. So why has he still got his badge if he's retired?
Yeah.
Like you said, would they not take that off you?
But again, you know, I assumed they just gave it back as some dramatic statement.
I presume so. I mean, it says it expires on the 12th of the 11th. That looks like 87.
Yeah, which is a plot point.
But this is 30 years later.
Yeah, it expired then. He's still carrying it around 30 years later.
Yeah, but he's not been retired for 30 years. He's only just retired. Because if he's roughly the same age as Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Right?
Bruce Willis was 30 when he started Moonlighting.
Yeah.
So he was 34 when he made Die Hard.
I didn't get that he'd retired. I just got it as more he left the force.
No, I got that he's retired. He's 65. Or thereabouts.
I just got that he hasn't been a police officer for that long.
Yeah, all right, okay. I got that he'd retired.
Okay.
Don't really matter, does it?
No.
You know.
I just got it more like if you retire a horse, only they didn't put two in the back.
Yeah. Well, so this guy who looks like he should be in Scream, because if this is the 30th anniversary of Nakatomi, we can presume this is Christmas 2018. Mm-hmm. So Scream has happened. And he's very definitely got, like, a ghost face mask on.
No, it's, you can't see it until later on. But he's got the theatre masks.
Oh, is it yin and yang?
Yeah, because one's laughing and one's crying. Right. You don't get that from the art here. It's only later on.
Okay, no, that's fair enough, because he's very theatrical.
Yeah.
In how he kills people. So John does end up going to Nakatomi because the guy with the scream mask is there. And he takes hostage the sister of Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
And John's wife, who apparently he's back with.
No.
Holly McClane.
No, they're not. They're just chatting, aren't they?
I don't
know. He's not back with her. Also, I didn't get the...
No, you're right. They're not back together.
So
but...
she's there to, like, atone and apologise for what her brother did 30 years ago, right?
Yes, she is.
Feels like she took her time to do that.
Which is waited for the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, like, and then, but also, isn't it his brother in the third one? So do we not care about him?
I mentioned that. Elsa Gruber,
is
Hans Gruber's sister, is on this apology tour, like you just mentioned. Why she's waited 30 years for do this, I don't know. But I mentioned, curiously, she never once mentioned Simon Gruber.
Were his crimes lesser? Like, we don't need to apologise for him.
Well, he should be arrested for that dreadful... gag that he did though, wasn't it? A man with seven pies and seven mothers and seven pies, all of that. That was dreadful, wasn't it? But yeah, he's not even mentioned.
No.
So the fact that Hans Gruber had a brother and she had two brothers, we just gloss over that.
Middle child. We don't talk about it.
Al Powell's son recognizes John when he walks into Nakatomi Plaza and he lets him in to Nakatomi. So Al Powell's son would be about 30.
Yeah.
Because his wife is pregnant in the first film, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
So that makes sense because we're assuming that this is Christmas 2018.
Yes.
And I'll explain my logic. Die Hard came out in July of 1988.
July?
Yes, it was a summer movie.
Right, okay.
It was a summer blockbuster. So I've always assumed it took place in the Christmas of that year, 1988, which I know would make it was set in the future at the time that it was released. But Christmas 1987 would make more sense because that was the past Christmas. But the sequel, Die Hard 2, says that it takes place 2 years later on Christmas 1990. So the first film has to take place Christmas 1988.
Right.
Despite the sequel being released in July 1990.
Right, okay.
So both of them are science fiction as well. six months into the future.
Okay.
So the first one has to be Christmas 1988, meaning this is Christmas 2018.
Okay.
That's absolutely right.
I get on board, yeah.
There is one panel here where John walks into Nakatomi and there is a Christmas tree. And I am using that as an excuse to build this entire show around this comic.
That's, I mean, you know, if it's on the anniversary, you'd assume it's on the same
it's
date.
It's Christmas Eve, yeah. The villain is called Mr. Movie Phone with an F.
Yeah.
Did you get that?
No.
I didn't either.
No.
So I don't know whether that's an American reference, Movie Phone. I don't know.
You could have called it Movie Drone.
They should have called it, if it was British, he would have called it Movie Drone.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
They say wanker a lot. I almost thought the writer was British because they say wanker and they drop the hard T in it as well later on as well. So I did think there was a little bit of British going on in there.
Well, she
lived in London.
Was brought up in London. Because I mentioned this. We've not got to that point yet. John's aided by an Interpol agent named Eleanor Sharp, who has her own reasons for pursuing Movie Phone, which turn out that as a child, her mum was killed by him.
Which was the case that John was investigating. Yeah.
Her dad left America because he just couldn't cope with being constantly reminded of her. But whilst in London, he just drove himself into depression and alcoholism. Yeah. She became an Interpol agent. That would explain why she uses British
because she lived swearing, there long enough.
Because she grew up in London.
Yeah.
So that made sense.
Yeah.
So I was down with that. They blow up another Nakatomi Plaza.
Yeah.
Because it's not Christmas. until somebody blows up Nakatomi Plaza.
Imagine the construction workers going, oh, another one.
Yeah, I bet.
Unionising.
I bet they're mightily pissed off.
See, after this first chapter. So I was kind of on the fence with this. I actively disliked this first chapter, and I thought that was how it was going to be for the rest of it. Because I switch off the second I'm watching a sequel and there is a link to something previous. Like, the character is the child of the character in the last one. Mm. You know, when everything's just a bit too neat, which is my issue with at least three of the Star Wars films. Mm. It all has to be a nice little bow. And so this one, it's all convenient. Mm. We're going to be at the same tower on the anniversary. We're going to bring back all these characters. And oh, this police officer just so happens to be the son of the old police officer. And yada, it's all too convenient. And then you get to the second chapter and it completely changes direction.
Yes, which I quite liked.
So yeah, no, I really liked it because I was thinking going in, just going, I am not going to like this because of that first chapter. And then the second we stepped away from that and it turned into something else, started being more fun.
Yeah, because we get the flashback then to how John encountered Mr. Movie Phone at the start of his career. So I presume that this is before Nakatomi happened.
Yeah, because it says he only just started.
Yeah, so that's a little bit woolly in that regard. But what I liked about this was Mr. Movie Phone was only a kid then. And this was his dad.
Yeah, right.
That John had this run in with.
Yeah.
Which played into Elsa, because he murdered... her mum.
Yeah.
So there was actually a more interesting character dynamic going on between those two.
Yeah.
And you can argue a case, it's her story, not John McClane.
It's just a shame that they didn't really delve into
it. Yeah, they didn't really go into it as much as they could. My complaint about the first part of it was, like you, John was too much of an asshole in the first chapter.
Yeah, and that's the thing though, never seeing the post Die Hard 3 sequels, I didn't know, was he just like that in that?
No, he calms down in the fourth and fifth one.
Because he felt too much like an asshole, more so than I remembered him being.
Yes, because the film did characterise him as a smart-ass asshole.
Yeah.
But he's charming because it's Bruce Willis.
Whereas he's aggressively asshole-y in...
Yes, in the first chapter of this.
Yeah.
And Willis was constantly trying to tone that down.
Right.
Even as early as Die Hard 2, he was like, can we make him less of an asshole?
Yeah.
And he did, you know, play an asshole in Moonlighting sometimes, but he does it charmingly.
Yeah.
But without Willis delivering this dialogue, sometimes he does come across as punchable.
Yeah.
But he does settle down as it goes along a bit. And yeah, in 4 and 5, he's a little bit, what's his name? He's a little bit toned down a bit. All of the movie-related deaths are quite funny.
I
found them funny. I have a dark sense of humour.
Some of them are quite grim, like the guy eating himself until he explodes in front of his family.
Yeah, that's quite. What film was that from?
He says, doesn't he?
Fat Soup. Dom DeLuise can't stop himself from eating.
They don't even shy away, do they? They name the actors in the films.
Yeah. He does a homage to Tale of Two Cities in Paris, where he cuts a guy's head off. Death by Snakes, a la Raids of the Lost Ark in Egypt. A string of From Hell murders in London, sure Alan Moore was delighted. A man stabbed 7 times in honour of 7 samurai in Japan. A Roman crucifixion recreation of the death scene in Spartacus. And that's his...
Yeah.
It seems very elaborate way of killing people.
Oh, but it's great. And I think that's what I liked about it as well, is it felt like a fun villain. Like an almost Batman-esque villain. Which is interesting, because his origin is like Bruce Wayne's.
Well, that's interesting, yeah. Because his origin has him... murdering a couple and their child as they come home from the cinema.
Watching Zorro.
Implying that kid was Bruce Wayne, and that's why there's no Batman in the Die Hard universe.
Yeah.
Because Movie Phone killed Bruce
as well. But this felt like such a Batman villain that almost shouldn't work in a Die Hard film. But
yes,
it did in this.
Yeah, and I think that was very deliberate.
Yeah.
That he murders Bruce Wayne's family. The house is psycho.
Yeah, which took me out of it, because I know that house is on a lot in Universal.
Yes, it's on the back. It's in an episode of Knight Rider.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Knight Rider did not leave any set unused if it was just lying around.
No.
They were like, no, we're having that.
Now, they do say, though, it's a house that looks like the Psycho house, but that is drawn to be the Norman Bates house.
Yes. And, yeah, as he even... Yeah, like you say, you mentioned it was designed by Norman Bates, but it is the Psycho house.
Yeah.
And they actually reference Psycho.
Yeah.
Is a pro as horror is clearly what's on his mind here. So John gets thrown into a shark tank.
That's
Batman.
That's so Batman-esque mm-hmm. that you've got a massive, giant, it's a huge tank
yeah.
under this house.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, and the problem I had with this was Elsa gets killed by the shark.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have John's plot armour.
Yeah.
She can die. Yeah. John McClane can't die. And it's like, the shark wouldn't differentiate. Now, it would make sense if, like, he cut her legs or something.
Yeah.
So she was bleeding, so the shark's attracted to the blood.
Yeah.
That would have made a little bit more sense. But, you know, it's woolly, but, you know, they'd eat Bruce Willis. They wouldn't care that he was Bruce Willis.
It did feel a bit woolly, though, that she's about to be eaten by the shark, but all she cares about is atoning for the sins of her brother.
Yeah.
The brother that she remembers.
And I liked that Movie Phone sings Farewell and Adieu. And she's getting eaten.
Yeah.
It's
so Batman. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great. Eleanor Sharp's here. She comes over there, comes with John. Where did she get that rope?
It was just lying around.
Was it?
Conveniently long enough rope.
Okay, fair enough.
But John gets really wound up at her as well.
Mm.
That she chased after Movie Phone and didn't come back to rescue him.
Yes.
He would have done the same. Anyone would have done the same to catch the criminal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, it's what... It is what it is. There's a lot of, like, shorthand
yeah.
in this. It's not very deep.
No.
And the Christmas connection is very tenuous, but we're just going
to...
We're going to gloss over that. One of the things I loved about it, so like you said, that these couple are leaving Zorro... Movie Phone kills them. He steals the pearls.
Yeah.
Exactly the same as Batman. Kills all of them. She ends up living in London. And wouldn't you know, from her apartment in London, she can see Big Ben.
It's just so that she remembers that she's in London.
Yes.
I love that shorthand in movies and TV shows, yeah. though. Like, you I know mean, where you are, like, but you can see...
In France, the Arc de Triomphe is always yeah. there.
Like, I've been to London plenty of times, and the Big Ben yes. is not just looming there.
I have never stayed in a hotel where I can look out the window and see Big Ben.
Yeah.
If her dad has got an apartment in London where he can see the clock tower...
That's good money.
Yeah, he's not doing badly.
No.
I mean, unless the mum had a hell of an insurance policy.
Yeah. Tell you what, though, I did once stay in New York, and from my hotel window, I could see the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
Literally a couple of blocks down. So yeah, maybe the theory does hold up. These guys are onto something.
Did you notice the other comic in joke?
No, go on.
Her mum and dad are Frank and Maria, the Punisher.
Okay.
Punisher's right. Frank Castle and his wife was Maria.
Okay. So
although
her family gets gunned down and she goes yeah. on a quest for revenge.
The Punisher. It's clever, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I say clever.
It's intentional.
Yes, it's intentional. My question about that, though, Frank kills himself in London. He commits suicide in London. Mm-hmm. Why is he then buried in New York?
His will said that he wanted to be buried with his wife.
So she... Okay, I'll go with that. That's a fair enough explanation. Yeah, like you said, around chapter 2, chapter 3, it calms down a bit, and it does become a Scream-like spoof of movies and comics.
Yeah.
As we've mentioned, her origin is the Punisher. Movie Phone kills Bruce Wayne and Thomas and Martha. Why did you say that now? So, all of that is quite interesting. It would have been better, I think, if it had been called something like Die Hard Screaming.
Right.
Because he's very definitely leaning to Scream territory.
Yeah.
With his elaborate kills.
The constant commentary and
yeah.
references.
Yeah. But overall, this wasn't a bad sequel. My only issue with it was, if this is 1 week... So the ending were... Eleanor Sharp dies.
Mm-hmm.
John saves Holly.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy. The ending takes place 1 week later, because it literally says that, in New York City, where they bury Eleanor next to Frank and Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it look like summer? This will be New Year's
Eve,
right?
It's just a bright day.
It don't look like winter to me in New York, that. None of them look cold.
No. I mean, New York winters are cold as well,
yeah.
so... It's just a...
The wind cuts right through you. It's no place for the old.
The winter sun... is quite low, and it is,
I can't believe you didn't acknowledge my Pogs reference, though.
I did.
I'm sure, in all these Christmas references.
I acknowledged it. It was acknowledged. I just didn't, you know.
That's fair enough. I thought that was fine. That was perfectly enjoyable, isn't it?
Once it stops being a cute, diehard sequel,
yeah,
and it starts being a fun John McClane versus the Joker.
Which is what it is.
It starts being more fun.
Yeah.
and intentionally so. Like the references and the callbacks are definitely intentional.
Yeah.
So it feels like you're being winked at, like you're in on the joke as well.
Yeah, and it does very much feel like Heath Ledger's Joker, who has been incredibly influential.
Yeah.
Because what's Javier Bardem in Skyfall if he's not Heath Ledger's Joker?
Okay, right.
And any other numbers like that. There have been numerous ideas for Die Hard 6, with Bruce Willis expressing a desire to retire John McClane in a sixth and final film. By September 2017, director Len Wiseman publicly floated that he was casting for a young version of John McClane for a self-penned origin story called John McClane. Startlingly original idea.
That's late to the party, isn't it? Because you remember when every film, legacy sequel...
John just, Rambo.
Just Rambo.
Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
It was going to be based on the Die Hard Year One comic book miniseries, which I've never read.
Right.
It sounds like a terrible idea to me, but I don't know. 6 months later, the studio enlisted duo Chad Hayes and Curry Hayes to rewrite the screenplay after Bruce Willis refused to endorse it and the actor playing young him.
Okay.
I did not know Bruce Willis had that level of veto power over a Die Hard movie.
Right, okay. Maybe he does.
Apparently. In July 2018, producer Lorenzo Di Bonaventura submitted an updated treatment titled McClane. You see what it's getting cleverer.
Is it going to be called Clane next?
Yeah. Or Muck. Further confirming that the storyline features elements of McClane and Holly's characters in the 1970s, intermixed with their present-day counterparts. The following month, Wiseman stated pre-production on the new film would start fairly soon once the script had been completed. We can say from the future of 2025, soon to be 2026, this didn't happen. So we're quite confident in predicting that that wouldn't happen, because it hasn't.
We're going to say that now.
I love how time travel works.
In between recording this and it coming out, there is going to be an announcement.
There is no way on God's green earth that the Die Hard 6 with Bruce Willis is coming out in the next week. That ain't happening. For
announced.
Reasons I will get into in a bit. Tobey Maguire joined the production team of this movie that didn't happen.
Right.
In 2018. In what capacity? I have no idea.
Okay.
There's no way he's playing young John McClane. I'm sorry, but that ain't happening. This was all off the internet, by the way, so it may be bullshit.
Yeah, right.
Far as I know. December 2018, Di Bonaventura handed in yet another draft, this time without input from Bruce Willis. Actress Mary Elizabeth Winstead said she would be interested in returning as Lucy Gennaro McClane in future installments. She played Lucy in Die Hard 4.
Okay.
Die Hard 5, his son is played by Jai Courtney.
Okay.
Who was in Spartacus.
Right.
And in one of the Terminator movies that flopped.
Okay.
He's not having a good... He's in Suicide Squad as well. He's Captain Boomerang.
His agent is must love him.
Yeah, but he's getting good money in these movies. So yeah, that's presumably true. It's all going well for him in that regard. Winstead later intimated that she doubted the film would ever get made. From the future of 2025, we can positively say that Mary Elizabeth Winstead was spot on. That film did not get made. Die Hard was removed from the Fox slate after Disney's acquisition and senior management shakeups, and the production was cancelled outright in August 2019 after further consideration from Disney. Willis, however, did reprise his role as John McClane for one final, I'm not going to say film, short film.
Okay, right.
Advert for Die Hard car batteries. In 2020, alongside Argyle, the chauffeur, and Theo, the only survivor of the first film.
Okay.
Did you not watch the link I sent you? That'll be a no. I sent you a link to this.
Right, okay.
A couple of weeks ago when we were prepping this.
I've just been caught out in 4K.
Okay, well, whatever. It's actually quite fun. Okay. It's about 6 minutes long.
That's a long advert.
Yeah, so it's a proper mini film. So I presume it's for cinemas.
That's long for cinemas.
Rather than TV.
Yeah.
But it is actually a lot of fun. And it's interesting to see Theo back and he gets killed. So that answers that
in
question.
In a car battery advert.
Yeah, what happened to Theo? He gets killed in Die Hard 5.3. Let's call that one a whatever.
Okay.
Argyle's a nice addition, although he's still driving limos.
Right.
He looks very, very old.
Okay.
Older than Bruce Willis does.
Right.
But watching it in retrospect, Willis is slurring his lines.
And obviously you get why he would have done an advert.
And, I mean, obviously he was paid a lot of money. In July 2022, Willis was on the Fox lot at Fox headquarters, the location of Die Hard, to mark the film's anniversary. The footage was shared by his wife, Emma Heming Willis, on social media. But by February 2023, Willis was diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia and his family announced his retirement from acting. So that Die Hard battery advert is the last we will ever see of Bruce Willis as John McClane. And you know what? It's better than the last two films. Genuinely. Right. I watched that and I was like, this is actually really good.
Okay.
And with the benefit of hindsight and what's happened to him and this dementia that he's got, you can see that something's not quite right.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things is, I have a huge soft spot for Bruce Willis. You know I've got a massive soft spot for Bruce Willis. And that all basically comes down to David Addison and Moonlighting.
I mean, rewatching that last year and realising that everything you would say to us growing up came from that TV show.
From Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
I adored Moonlighting. Moonlighting started, I'll have been 14
right
when Moonlighting started. And Bruce Willis was, David Addison was everything a 14-year-old boy wants to be as a man. He was smart, he was funny, he got Dana Delaney and Sybil Shepherd, there's nothing wrong with that, and Virginia Madsen,
right,
in one episode, yeah. Like, player!
All from just being a silly little guy.
All from just being, and all of that, I absolutely adored him. One of my things is, I don't think he ever really capitalised on his Moonlighting persona.
Yeah.
That smart, funny, could do comedy, but turn to drama on a heel turn.
The rest of his career was built on Die Hard and John
and being Lee. Serious.
And being, well, the action hero.
Yeah. Apart from one notable exception.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen Hudson Hawk?
I have seen Hudson Hawk, yes.
What did you think
for my sins?
Hudson Hawk is brilliant. I love Hudson Hawk.
It's fun.
Yeah. And because it flopped, yeah, he never did that again. Everything after that, he had to be serious. And I kind of think it's a shame because we lost what I think, along with Michael J. Fox,
yeah,
one of the best light comedic actors of the 1980s when he went down the drama route. And I was quite sad when it was announced what happened to him because everybody was dogpiling on him.
There was a long string of shitty...
Yeah, straight-to-DVD movies.
Films, yeah.
And there was rumours going around. His dialogue was being fed to him via earpiece.
Right.
And people in the know did actually come out and said, well, stow your roll.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's... Back off a bit.
Yeah.
But there were people who were being outright awful about him doing this. Turns out he spent 10 years... doing any crappy role that was paid. He was being paid $1 million a film to show up for 4 days and do that work. And it turns out he was doing that to bankroll his family, who would then have enough money to look after him when the inevitable happened. And the inevitable has happened. He's now at the point where he can't even speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another example of how dementia is shocking and affects everybody. And I think it's a shame. Mm-hmm. I think it's, to me, he will always be David Addison.
Yeah.
And every year I watch Die Hard and 'twas the episode before Christmas. Yeah. Santa's hotline. Santa's what line? You ever been good?
You ever been real good?
You've been great. Yeah. You want to be? That bit where him and Maddie storm into the office.
Yeah.
And he's just mimicking everything she says. I'm calling the police. Call me the police. Stop that, David. Me and your mum do that to this day.
I know. I'm well aware.
When we say the same thing at the same time, both of us will go, stop that, David.
Yeah.
You know what something is.
Something?
Something. Something she left with the pesto. Do you know what that is?
I can guess.
Well, I'm not giving that baby to a woman suspected of murder.
Suspected, Maddie. Suspected. Doesn't that word mean anything
My
to
mind
you?
Is made
don't
up.
Don't you think you at least owe her the courtesy of listening to her
anything.
Story? What are you doing?
I'm doing what I should have done all along. What I wanted to do originally. What I should have done
last night.
Stop that, David. I'm calling the police,
David.
Hello, police?
I hate you!
I just loved Moonlighting and I loved Bruce Willis and I still have a soft spot for him. And I do think that little Die Hard advert, battery advert, was better than the last three films. And this was a perfectly cromulent sequel.
Yeah.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon. Which is why they changed it to the TV version when they couldn't say motherfucker.
Like Melon Farmer.
Like a Melon Farmer.
It's like it's the third one, isn't it, where they change his able to say I hate everyone.
Yeah.
It's not really.
They changed the board. Yeah, I forgot about that. Absolutely brilliant.
Doesn't really have quite the same gravity, does it?
It does not have the same gravitas, that is very true. But we're not ending on that note.
We're not.
No. There was a thought that perhaps A Million Ways to Die Hard wasn't maybe a Christmas story.
No. Well, the initial idea, and I'll throw myself under the bus here, that we would both bring a choice to the table.
Yeah.
And I just didn't. I couldn't think of anything. I couldn't be bothered looking through all of my stuff. I just couldn't think of anything.
They've invented this thing called the internet, where you can literally just type
in. What if I don't have it? That's the thing. That is true. It needed to be something that I had. And then it was literally just on a whim when you came visiting the other day that you were reading this that I'd bought. And it's like, oh, there's a Christmas story in this.
Yeah.
It's like, there we go. That's convenient.
Well, because this is an audio medium, the this that Michael is referring to is the facsimile edition of Batman number 9 from December 10th, 1941. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've listened to this show with any degree of regularity, and if you haven't, why not? Because this is the kind of gold you get every month.
Oh, yeah. For free.
Yeah, unless you buy us a Christmas coffee, which would be greatly appreciated at this seasonal time. Link's in the little tag at the end, so don't turn off early. This facsimile, we love facsimile editions.
Yeah, and I buy all, because you don't buy these ones, do you? The magazine-y ones.
I wish I'd bought this one, Batman number 9, and if I see it, I'm going to pick it up. I don't tend to buy the Detective Comics and the Action Comics ones, because there's lots of other stuff as well.
Right.
That I have no interest in.
No,
I'm only interested in the Batman story.
I buy them anyway. Even if I don't read them, I'm like, I sit on my little cook chair while the DC solicitations come out, and the solicitations in my wallet have a little conversation. And your wallet just
loses.
Yeah, basically every time something says facsimile on the end of it, my wallet goes, all right, okay.
See, I don't buy all them, but if I see this one, I'm going to buy it, because I absolutely love this. All of the stories in this look interesting. I did only read the Christmas one for this, but I do have the omnibuses. Right. This is in the omnibus.
Okay.
But yeah, this story is called Christmas. Clever. Yeah. I think you'll agree.
They weren't beating about the bush for that.
No, it's
straight
it's,
to the point.
It's literally called Christmas. It's got a lovely cover.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin in a spotlight. You know what they do that for? Go the on. Opening credits of the 1966 film.
Right.
Adam West and Burt Ward.
Is that the most spoofed cover of all time?
Yes, and certainly one of the most iconic.
Yeah.
I think that cover's brilliant. See, why did this get a facsimile? What is it about this that got a facsimile?
What is it? Is it the first appearance of someone?
I don't know. Joker story in
that's it. That's not the Was it on the back of the cover?
No, it's Daisy Rifles.
No, I meant, is it because of the cover?
Did it get a facsimile just because that cover's iconic?
Yeah.
Possibly.
What's the first story in it?
The first story is The Four Fates.
That one's really good, actually, but no, it's probably that's not the reason why it got a facsimile.
Yeah.
Nor the one where Batman goes undercover as a whaler pirate, which is also quite an entertaining story.
Yeah, a lot of these Golden Age stories are. They're absolutely... Because I read my facsimile of Batman 47 came this month. There's some great stuff in that.
It was the one I was reading yesterday, which I messaged you about, is the first appearance of Clayface.
Yeah.
That's
a good story.
Pre-actual Clay. Yeah. And it's great, because the first three pages is Bruce having a little tour of the movie set, and about five different people threaten the producer of that film. So when someone dies, everyone's like, it could literally be anyone.
It's an Agatha Christie.
It's great.
It just takes part of Team Batman to get them all in the drawing room at the end, like Benoit Blanc. And say, well, it couldn't be you because...
I with the foghorn leghorn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he put the accent on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's Batman, he's a master of accents.
Benoit Blanc and Batman. There we go.
Rian Johnson, forget the Star Wars movies you're going to make, because I don't care. I don't want them. I would rather have you do your own stuff. Stay away from Star Wars. Star Wars is a tainted brand now.
Right.
It's all shit at this point, let's be honest. How many TV shows have they made?
Yeah.
How many of them are good?
Less than a few.
So, you know, stay away from it. Just
keep doing Knives Out.
Yeah, keep doing Benoit Blanc movies. Make more stuff like Poker Face.
Which he's changed, which I find quite interesting, because the actress behind the main role...
Yeah. Pokerface got cancelled. Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah. So there were plans to bring it back with a different studio. She started a AI actors company.
Oh, right. So they got rid of her.
And was quite vocal about it. And when there was backlash, she doubled down on it. Rian Johnson, who has been vehemently anti-AI, is rewriting a similar TV show with a recast main character.
Oh, right, okay. Because let's be honest, he basically just seems to be in his I'm just going to do Columbo phase.
Yeah, and it's great.
Because what's Benoit Blanc if he's not Columbo?
Yeah.
And Poker Face was Columbo.
Yeah.
Right, well, down to having the little copyright logo underneath the title in the opening credits.
But 3 for 3, the Benoit Blanc movies, great. Yeah. If he just keeps doing these.
Just do that, yeah. Just keep doing that. Forget Star Wars, move on.
Yeah.
Although, the new Ryan, what's his first one, seems okay. It's not Reynolds. The Blade Runner guy.
Gosling.
Yeah.
The better of the Ryans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, undeniably the better of the Ryans.
Yeah.
Because Ryan, what's his name, Deadpool, didn't do the Fall Guy, did he?
He didn't know. Also, Ryan Reynolds isn't in The Nice Guys.
That is also
that
true.
As well.
And Gosling did Blade Runner.
Gosling did do Blade Runner.
So Gosling's just got a higher cachet of cool.
And he's Ken.
Yeah, but Ken's a bit of a drip, isn't he? Which is the point.
Yeah.
I take that's the point.
Every
he's time, better as the Fall Guy.
Every time I watch a Ryan Gosling film, there is a part in my brain that has to go, no, do not change our entire wardrobe and cut your hair to look like him, like you did when La La Land came out. But I'm watching The Nice Guys going, that is a nice suit, though.
He's actually quite cool in this. He's always getting beaten up, though, isn't
he's
he?
Always getting,
nice
he is, yeah.
Why is there not a sequel? Why is there not three of them?
Why? Yeah, exactly.
Because it was announced the other day. Well, God, what?
Benoit Blanc meets The Nice Guys.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. There was another announcement the other day. They're doing another one. I can't even remember what film it was.
Right.
But it's like they're bringing back another, like, Terminator.
Okay.
Which has flopped. Every film has flopped since 1992. Yeah. But they keep making them. Tron's always flopped.
That's
true. The 1982 one flopped.
There isn't a single good Tron film.
Well, the first one's all right.
Yeah, if you can survive through the headache that it gives you.
but they flopped. And the third one flopped.
Yeah.
But they keep making them. That was it. They were going to make another Tron.
No, they've made it. It's out.
No, they're going to do another one.
Another one?
I think.
Right?
There was something. Anyway, it was another one of those franchises. Okay. We'll come back to them in the minute we start playing recording.
Yeah.
But instead of making these ultra shit sequels
yeah.
to films that flopped. Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I loved Blade Runner 2049, but Blade Runner flopped.
I mean,
and just because it built up this cult following over the years, that was not an audience of mainstream people going, you know what the world needs? Another Lethal Blade Weapon 5.
Okay.
They've announced Lethal Weapon 5.
Okay.
Come on, he's got to be really too old for this shit now.
Have we forgotten Mel Gibson?
Apparently not. So, who wants that? Instead of doing that, why have we not got 4 sequels to The Nice Guys?
Why don't we franchise Cobra?
Yeah.
Like, let's really double down.
Yeah, but Stallone's in that list with Mel Gibson.
It can be his
recast
son. Yeah.
No, don't do any of this. Recast.
Do a little
don't
cobra.
Do that. It's his son shit.
Baby Cobra.
Yeah, Baby Cobra.
The Rattlesnake.
Yes, we call it Cobra 2, The Rattlesnake. Yeah, I'm down with that. Anyway, this comic, written by Bill Finger, with art by Bob Kane and Jerry Robinson. This story was genuinely fun.
It's fun, yeah, and it's...
We were supposed to be visiting you because you were laid up, having your appendix out,
yeah.
Being all ill and...
No, they weren't doing it while you were visiting.
No, we didn't watch them doing it. This was later. And your mum and your sister are all, are you okay? And I'm just sat there reading Batman comics.
I expect nothing less. I expect nothing more, either.
Well, that's fun, because you aren't going to get any more. Anyway, delivering toys to an orphanage, Batman learned, because that's the kind of thing Batman did in the 40s, Batman learns that all a young lad named Tim... once for Christmas is his father jailed for a crime he didn't commit. The man's name, Bob Cratchit, was framed, see? And Batman and Robin track down the real killer by pretending to be the ghost of Christmas past. So the kid's Tiny Tim.
Yeah.
The dad's Bob Cratchit.
He's not sickly, though.
No, he's not sickly. And it's not really a retelling of A Christmas Carol.
It's not even remotely, no.
So, but he's just got those names.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool. What I liked about this, so the kid's been bullied in the orphanage.
Because he believes in Santa.
Because he believes in Santa.
And Bruce Wayne has come in and go, whoa, 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 no. This kid's all right, you know, Santa is real.
Yeah.
And he goes out of his way to prove to the other kids as well.
Which completely ruins the ending, where Robin says, and I know that Father Christmas isn't real. And you're like, geez, kids are reading this comic, Robin. Did you not read the last 8 pages? Where Batman just literally spent the last 8 pages of this comic book convincing the readership that Santa Claus is real.
Yeah.
For Robin to go, I know he's not real. There's a reason people voted for you to get crowbarred to death.
That's another Robin.
Sid. Yeah, there's most people thought it was Burt Ward.
There's a reason why they call him Dick.
Yeah. Yeah, Robin didn't get the memo, did he?
But what I like about it is it starts off, Bruce Wayne is using his wealth to buy Christmas presents
for orphanages.
For orphans. Yeah. It's almost as if he wasn't thinking with punching people, but he donated his wealth to those who need it.
And his time.
Yeah.
Because he goes to the orphanage.
Exactly,
to visit people. It is like he doesn't just beat up the criminally insane all the time, isn't it? It's like he has a social conscience.
Yeah.
I wish we had a camera that we could look into. But what I loved about this, so Batman and Robin starts digging. And I love that in all the panels, Batman's really gothic.
Yeah.
Like, it's always raining, it's always night, he's always hiding behind his cape. And then he's dragging this poor kid behind him in shorts, dressed in, like, red and green. And Batman's all wrapped up.
Do you think the Robin's costume was intentional choice to make Batman look more angsty?
It's a deliberate choice to make Batman look cooler.
Yeah.
Because he does. And he takes Robin's going on with a cold after this, right? It must be freezing because it's December.
Bruce, you know, it's cold. Can I wear some pants?
No. He's wearing shorts.
The shorts stay on.
Well, hopefully the shorts stay on.
But you have a big cape that covers you. I have this little thing.
This little thing. Whereas Batman's like,
I can't even glide, Bruce.
He's such a bastard, the poor Robin. But the point that I'm trying to make when we finish laughing for a second is that the kid's dad was committing a crime.
Yeah, but there was good intentions. It was pure intentions.
The kid wants this present. So he wants the Buzz Lightyear of the day. What were the Teletubbies, weren't they? You couldn't get them. And Teddy Ruxpin's
big thing?
Were big one
had,
here.
I had all four Teletubbies.
You did? I got you all four.
Did you steal them?
Yes. I never paid them back. So screw you, Woolworths. And you're bankrupt now, so who cares?
You bankrupted Woolworths.
By stealing four Teletubbies. Yeah, there was Teddy Ruxpin one year, and there was all the Tracy Island, Thunderbirds.
Right, okay.
Couldn't get that one year for love nor money. So he can't afford to buy his kid this present, which is a scooter.
I mean, you know, they didn't have Teletubbies back then.
They didn't have TV.
They didn't.
I don't know what they were doing. So that's why they had so many kids. So he decides it's not really stealing.
Yeah.
That he's going to steal this thing, and then when he gets a job, he will pay them back.
Legit.
How is that going to work?
I don't know.
Okay, so I nicked this from you. Please, no. I've got a job now, so I'm going to pay you. No, it's still theft.
Well-intentioned theft. It's good. It's fine. It's like stealing a loaf of bread to feed your hungry family.
But in the course of doing this crime, that it says he didn't commit, but he would have done.
Yeah.
He witnesses a murder that he is subsequently framed for.
Because it's funny as well. Like, he's only there for the scooter. But he still goes to check out the safe.
Yes.
There's
grey areas here. I think you'll agree. This isn't a pure good guy, bad guy scenario.
But he's less bad because he didn't kill the guy.
Yeah, he's less bad because he's not a murderer. Which I think kind of like the bare minimum for a decent human being to not be a murderer. But being a thief, apparently that's okay.
Batman is okay with the theft. Yeah. He draws the line of murder.
Because he doesn't actually do the theft.
Yeah.
So because he witnesses this murder, it stops him from committing a crime. So in many ways, he owes this murderer his thanks.
Exactly, yeah.
That's my take on the situation. So once again, Batman poses behind his cape. Every single panel, he's posing behind the cape because it's cool. They go to the home of the guy who said, well, he must have killed him, but it was your gun. Oh, he stole my gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Please believe this. Mm-hmm. Hook, line, sinker, and copy of Angling Times. So Batman goes to the real criminal. There is a Santa Claus outside playing Carol of the Bells.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a warning that he changes the lyrics to, the bad man is here, the bad man is here, the bad man is here. And I'm like, and Batman didn't hear that. Batman stood at the door, literally 5 feet away from a guy going, the bad man is here, the bad man is here.
He was just enjoying this herald.
As he sat there going, it's nice of him to change the lyrics for me.
And hark, the Batman arrived.
Hark, the Batman angels sing. So that was brilliant, that genuinely sat there just singing that Batman's arrived.
I mean, if Batman's going to use the front door...
Yeah,
he's
At least he's been polite about it, not bursting through his window like he would normally do. There are numerous times in this story as well that I found it incredibly amusing that Batman just pulls something out of his ass to save the day. So on page 6, I think it has page numbers, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. So they're having a big fight. He goes to confront the guy who really did the murder. He says, "I know you did it and I'm going to prove it."
Yeah.
And the guy says, "Screw you, Batman scene." He pulls out a gun.
He literally doesn't. The jig is up.
Yeah.
Like, he could have gotten away with this.
Yeah. If he just said, "Okay, good luck with that." My lawyer will be hearing from you at some point in the future. But so Batman throws ink in his face.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite funny. Batman and Robin sweep in. Fight happens. Robin's just about to get pistol whipped.
Yeah.
Why he pistol whips him instead of shooting him is a question that we'll just gloss over.
Yeah.
Because there's no point. Batman throws a pillow that stops the guy from clubbing Robin over the head.
Pillow.
Where did the pillow come from?
Is there not like a...
Does he have a pillow in his
utility belt? Is that like a sofa or an
armchair? No, he's in an office. He's sat on a wooden chair. There are no beds there. There's no implication that this is a bed sit. It looks like an office. He's behind a desk. He produces a pillow out of his bat ass. Maybe it's in his youth. I guess he needs a bat nap.
Yeah.
So, bat a pillow.
They are long nights.
In his bat utility belt. So that was funny. That made me laugh a great deal. On page 11, exactly the same thing happens. A shovel appears in the middle of a room for no reason other than Batman to be able to club the guy with a shovel.
Before we even get there, and this bit is genius.
Yes.
Where they get trapped in the water tank.
They do get trapped in a water
the
tank.
The only thing that could... Batman even says the only thing that can possibly save them right now is for someone to run some water.
Yes.
And enough water, like a big bath.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. And it just so happens that our very own criminal decides right now that he's going to have a shave.
No, he doesn't. He's cleaning the ink off his face.
He's cleaning the ink off his face.
Yeah, so you see, they set that. That's but good then, writing.
But then he gets distracted and he leaves the sink on.
This was brilliant. I loved this.
It's dumb.
No, it's not. It's great. Dumb. They set it up earlier. Batman throws ink in his face.
Yeah.
So he has to wash the ink off because he's a respectable man about
but
town.
But he's in too much of a rush that he can't turn the taps off.
He leaves the taps on. And in leaving the taps on, he saves Batman and Robin's life.
I know.
I thought that was genius Golden Age comic book writing. There's a setup there that you think nothing of.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a payoff where the villain saves Batman's life. I thought it was great. Okay. There was absolutely nothing wrong with that as far as I'm concerned. He's not pulling a bat pillow out of his bat ass.
Okay, I received my point.
I loved it. Again, we see the Father Christmas going, the Batman is here, the Batman is here. But this time, Batman twigs what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because fool me once, shame on you.
Fool me twice.
Yeah, so all that's brilliant.
I'm going to make you be a Santa for an orphanage.
Now, Batman disguises himself as the Ghost of Christmas Past, i.e. the guy he murdered.
This bit's so funny, because they've got nothing on this guy.
Yeah.
They've got nothing. So Batman convinces Commissioner Gordon and the police department.
Yep. To just go along with this.
I'm going to dress up as the ghost of the man he killed and convince him to admit to it.
Yeah, but the guy's got a gun and at no point shoots at the ghost.
Nobody does it, it's blanks.
Is it? Oh, yeah, he's planted him with blanks. Yeah, you're right. See, there you go. I missed that bit, so we both missed it. So, I rescind my point. So that's okay. But yeah, he dresses up as the Ghost of Christmas Past. So there is a little bit of a Christmas Carol connection.
Tangentially at best.
Tenuous. Oh, yes.
No, tenuous,
I will go with that. It's an extremely tenuous link. But the link is there. Batman does that beautiful old Golden Age thing of his. He takes the mask off to reveal his mask. Underneath the mask.
Yeah.
And underneath the white costume, he's wearing his bat costume. So all that, absolutely brilliant.
I just love that Commissioner Gordon sat there just like, and you want to dress up as the ghost. It's like just...
to force a confession out of this man. Now, in the 1940s, that was probably okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That was perfectly acceptable in the 1940s. We'll get away with it now. But in the 1940s, it was perfectly acceptable. And it ends with, God bless us, everyone. But it doesn't end there.
No, we get a very moonlighting ending.
We get a very moonlighting ending where Batman and Robin go to have Christmas with Commissioner Gordon and somebody called Linda Page, who I had no idea who this woman was. I was thinking, so was she a prototype Barbara Gordon because she's a young girl with red hair?
No, is that not his wife?
No.
What?
No, it isn't.
Right.
Linda Page, I'll tell you.
We did research.
We did research. Linda Page and Commissioner Gordon, because Alfred and Barbara Gordon haven't been created yet.
Yeah.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
Linda Page was a wealthy socialite romantically linked to Bruce Wayne. But she can't have meant much to Bruce Wayne because Bruce Wayne got engaged to another woman while they were still dating without her knowledge. So Commissioner Gordon is spending Christmas with Bruce Wayne's girlfriend. And Batman and Robin crash this party. And Commissioner Gordon's all like, God damn it. So she is a young, pretty redhead. And Commissioner Gordon's daughter will end up being a young, pretty redhead. I'm not joining any dots for you here. But the conclusions seem to be there. Yeah. I just need to take that leap.
Yeah.
So Linda Page is Barbara Gordon's mum.
So do you think after this...
Gordon shagged Linda Page, I totally think
Well,
that.
No, after this, after they all very cheerily look at the reader and say Merry Christmas...
Yeah, they turn to the camera
It was the most uncomfortable Christmas dinner they've ever had. Because Bruce Wayne obviously can't reveal that he's Bruce Wayne.
Exactly.
So he's clocking on that there's something going on, but he can't say something. And then when he goes back home as Bruce Wayne, he can't then say... Oh, where were you today? Oh, I was just out shopping with some friends. And he can't admit that he knows where she really was without revealing that he's Batman.
So that's why he got engaged to Elva Barr without her knowledge, because he was very, screw you. Do you know who Elva Barr turned out to be?
Go on.
Selina Kyle.
Okay.
Abso-fragging-lutely. Linda only appeared a handful of times in the 40s and a cameo in 1969 and 1980.
Right.
And that would... But yeah, they literally pull a Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Or a moonlighting. Twas the episode before Christmas. We reference it at the beginning of the show. We don't just throw the shit together. Where they look directly at the camera and say, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And that's how this particular Christmas
story... It should have started snowing inside.
Ends. It should have started snowing inside like it does in moonlighting. Because moonlighting, as we all know, was just a television show.
So that's what we're doing when we finish. We're going to we're gonna go
this
home.
This snow that we all heard is going to start falling
coming
inside.
In,
and then I'm going to leave and you're going to have to sort it out because we're at Hey Kids Comics supplementary Batcave today.
Yeah.
You know that like Bruce Wayne used to have a Batcave and the Batcave in town?
The Bat Attic and the Tap
House. This is this is the supplemental Hey Kids Batcave.
Okay.
This was fun.
Yeah.
It was goofy.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Batman causing numerous people to give up their lives of crime. Because he forgives the Father Christmas at the end.
Yeah, he makes him...
Yeah.
Because he redeems himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, he goes to the orphanage with Batman.
Yeah.
Batman says, right, you need to pretend to be Santa Claus for real.
Yeah.
So these kids believe in you.
And
he does. And he gets such a Christmas joy...
Yeah.
Of being nice to kids that he sees the error of his ways.
Yeah.
And he turns and he says, I'm going to go straight from now on, Batman. And Batman goes, right, well, I'm going to let you go because you have committed no more heinous crime than singing Carol of the Bells, but with different lyrics.
Yeah.
So I've got nothing on you.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to frame confession out of you. I'm just going to let you go.
You have seen the spirit of Christmas. Yeah. You may be free.
You can be free. Oh, God. And it ends.
It does. It's fun.
It's really great.
And it's sincere.
Yeah.
And like... It's overly camp and silly, but it's earnest and silly.
Yeah.
But it believes in itself. And so you're reading this going, oh, okay, yeah.
But the thing with these Golden Age stories is they had these really serious crime noir stories at their heart.
Yeah.
This guy's been murdered in this story.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy's going to get away with it because he's framed another man for that crime.
Yeah.
And that kid will grow up without a father because that guy's framed that guy for a crime he didn't actually commit.
Yeah.
We'll ignore the theft for now.
Yeah.
That's a proper crime noir story
that
Batman has to prove innocent. But then he goes down these goofy alleyways of Ghosts of Christmas Past. We're going to make you pretend to be Father Christmas and turn into the camera to say Merry Christmas. And that was every single one of these Golden Age stories. They had these proper serious crime noir stories. But they'd have to do things to acknowledge that, yeah, kids are reading this.
And I think as well, how much of that stemmed from the fact that Detective Comics had its time. Every other story was another Detective Noir story.
Mm.
So what are you going to do with your costumed one? Well, you've got to kind of make it a little camp. You've got to embrace that silliness.
Yeah, and this does a lot. And again, on the cover, Batman.
Yep.
All cool with his cape. I love that throughout this entire story, every time you saw Batman, he was posing. And it's probably because it was cold.
Yeah.
So he's wrapping his big leather cape around.
Doesn't care about his wall.
Yeah, why poor Robin shivering to death and suffering from serious shrinkage.
No, Bruce, I think I've got hypothermia. just dance around somewhere.
He's go back to the cave and his lips are blue.
Bruce, these pixie boots are really thin. My toes are wet.
Yeah, but screw that, kid. We're going to Commissioner Gordon's house now. Okay. Will there be a fire?
The spirit of Christmas will warm you up.
Oh, brilliant. Anyway, that was our two Christmas, I say Christmas, one of them was Christmas, stories for this time. As this is dropping on the Christmas Eve of 2025,
mm-hmm.
Here at Hey Kids Towers, which is basically me and you, wish to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year of whatever denomination you celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
We're all inclusive here. We're not bothered. You do what you do. You do you, boo. You can have a Christmas where you dress up like Father Christmas in a bondage outfit. I'm not bothered. You be whatever you want to be.
Is that under or...
However you want to do it. Don't care. You be you. If you can't be you, if you can't be camp at Christmas...
When can you be camp?
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. We'll see you in 2026 with all new episodes and beyond until we drop dead. Have a good Christmas and we'll see you real soon. Take care.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Hey Kids Comics is a The Devil Will Make Work for Idle Hands to Do production and hosted by Andrew and Michael Leyland. All opinions expressed in the show are the opinions of the hosts and no one else. The free-to-use music that closes and opens the show was the sci-fi cyberpunk trailer by somebody called Stringer Bell on the Pixabay.com free-to-use website. Thank you very much to them. Every single episode of the show going all the way back to the beginning in 2010 is available on archive.org at the address archive.org/details/@APLUK, where you can fill your boots on over 15 years of classic episodes. If you would like to support the show, you can buy Michael and I, or both of us, or one of us, a coffee. Go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/A Leyland. In 1 month, an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics, coming in your ears. It's a date.